Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio. It is Friday, July 29th, 2016. The Democratic National Convention has just wrapped up, and Rachel and I are very excited to have back on Sarah Burris of RawStory.com, who was there in the flesh, in person.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, guys.
So were you there all 3 days?
I was in Philly all 3 days. I was not in the arena all 3 days.
Okay.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, 4 days.
And like some of the days we were covering a lot of stuff that was happening outside and the protest rallies and everything. Some days I was meeting up with people for interviews. And Monday it was just so hot. I couldn't even go outside.
And then half the time there were like crazy thunderstorms I heard, and like,
oh my gosh,
press tents were getting flooded out and hit by lightning. And
so Monday, right, it's miserably hot. By the time everybody gets to the arena and folks are working out of the press tents, it starts raining, and it's like torrential downpours. It's like Oklahoma style thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it came down in sheets so fast that I think there was just flash flooding, and I think that like the tents were leaking, and plus it was just flooding. So
Jesus.
I think people got scared that there was a chance of folks being electrocuted. Like there were tons of photos.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. No, it was no joke.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There were tons of photos of like water and wires on the floor.
Oh my God, it's such a glamorous job that you have, being a reporter.
Right? but they evacuated the tents and everything. I don't know where people all went. I mean, I ended up at an Italian food place in Little Italy, and there were a bunch of MSNBC people.
Sorry.
And everybody was just, you know, stuffing their faces and drinking as much as they possibly could.
Who's the biggest drinker in that bunch? Or are you not at liberty to say?
She'll never tell.
I bet Chris Matthews can put away quite a few.
It wasn't the on-air talent, the on-air people. It was all like behind the scenes folks.
Well, who cares about them? No, I'm just
I know, right? and I mean, among our crowd, like my staffers, I am such a lightweight. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Really?
I can have like one drink and I am done.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But dinner was really good. I mean, the Italian community in Philly is a longstanding thing. And so there are legit Italian places.
Oh,
like
yeah,
there's a whole place that does some pretty amazing gnocchi. And I mean, just the food all week. I wanted to eat all of the things. And I just couldn't. But there were I went to a Cuban place last night that was just superb.
Nice.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was an adventure. It was crazy. And then like last night it started raining again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at my map for what's going on this week at the weather back, you know, now that I'm back in DC. And it's supposed to be raining and storming all week. So it's just like, whoa, what is happening?
God.
Can't get away from it.
So, okay.
We have so many questions.
I know.
We
seriously
don't know where to start. But
I have answers.
Great. Was this your first convention?
No, I went in 2008.
Oh, my God.
And I talked a little bit. I posted a picture of a photo that I took of President Obama before he was president in the giant, what do they call it? The place where we had the Invesco Field. And they had to expand the acceptance speech for Obama because so many people wanted to go.
Yeah,
right.
I remember that.
So I took a picture of that, and then I took another photo of Obama the night that he spoke, and I just put them on like against each other.
Yeah.
And I saw him in 2007 at the Iowa caucuses for the first time, and then I saw him again in 2008, in January 2008 in South Carolina, and you know, then I got to see him at the first debates, and then inauguration, and now seeing him again, it just was really, it was like wrapping up my political idealism into a, I said into a nicely wrapped ribbon around a box of memories and hope.
Yeah. How did you feel about his speech the other night?
It was so powerful and so beautiful. It was, and I've heard somebody said on Twitter that he worked on it until about 3 o'clock in the morning the night before.
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
But initially he had the speech and it was a lock, and then he saw Michelle speak and she did so well, and it was
he
so
better
well received.
Up my game, yeah.
He was like, "Oh damn, I better know what I'm doing."
I think he's going to campaign really, really hard. I mean, his legacy really depends on Hillary winning.
Yeah.
I
was very emotional after his speech. Me too. You know, I find myself so kind of, not cynical necessarily, but sort of me against the crazy fucking bullshit world. And, you know, I watched him talk and, like, I don't know, I believed him. You know, I just felt like, oh, it is good and we are good and the world is going to be okay. And he's right. We aren't that bad. And, like, we just tie together. And I just felt like I was, like, on this weird, like, high after watching that speech. And I thought, like, what an incredible thing to be able to do, to give a speech that powerful, to make somebody like me just really, like, believe everything you just said, even though I know it's not true.
No, I agree. I feel like, and that's always been that way for me with Joe Biden. His speech was fantastic. It was not Barack Obama's speech, but it was absolutely Joe Biden, and, you know, his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah,
Joe Biden.
He was great.
I loved it.
But I've always felt like, when the chips are down, the president comes out and is sort of this therapist in chief to the nation. And it's like a it's just a very thoughtful way, I think, to rally all of us together, that I've missed in the last several years. Like, you, I feel like when he's done it in the last couple of years, it's been around shootings and just terrible events. And this was something that made me feel that sense of hope that he created in 2008.
Like, this is Obama's vision of America. This is what he really intensely, I think, authentically believes America is. And listening to him talk about that America makes me feel like, again, that sense of hope from 2008, you know, like, I don't know. It was powerful, powerful stuff.
Yeah. It makes me feel like we can do this and that anything is possible and we shouldn't give up. And the last couple of years, especially, I think, working in the media and living in Washington, D.C., I get so cynical and so down on just watching everything and feeling like there's nothing that I can do and feeling like there's this the weight of the world on my shoulders. And I have this responsibility as a millennial to, you know, save our world and rally us together. And so when you have these political leaders who are like, yes, we are in this, we are going to do this, everything's going to be okay, just don't give up. I was just like, yes, I needed that. Thank
Me
you.
Me too. Oh my God. Totally.
Can you just like put that into like a positive affirmation, 30-second thing that I can play for myself every morning?
And oh my God, we should make that. Just cut his speech up into little 30-second, like, profound bites,
he's
and I'll
be
just listen to it every
the most
morning.
Successful motivational speaker ever after he leaves office, if that's what he chooses.
I don't
to
think
do.
He's a servant, man. I don't think he's gonna do that. I think
He'll
he's gonna
some
go do
it.
Something great.
Well, you see how effective
well,
you
know,
it is.
It is. I mean, he could do anything.
Yeah, he could. And I read that article where he talked about what he's gonna do afterwards, and he said he's gonna sleep for like 3 months or something like that. Which I agree. I would totally do that.
Yeah. He's not going to, he's going to be bored. He's going to need to do something.
Oh, he'll do plenty. He'll do plenty.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And but, Michelle, I loved her. Oh my God. Who doesn't? She's just ridiculously
amazing. I know.
Amazing.
She's just, she's so, and I have always felt like, I know that the president is a very smart man, but I have always felt like she is the brains of that operation.
Yeah. Well, she was his boss. That's
totally
like she was his boss when they met, and then like, you know, no, she's everything.
She's just a rock star.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, she could run for office if she wanted to, but I don't see her going that direction. No,
thank you.
She'll work public advocacy and public works and
absolutely
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But before we pepper you with questions, because I know we have a lot, just your sort of general impressions or interesting anecdotes or stories or things you experienced being in Philly, Sarah, if you don't mind indulging us.
One of the big things that I noticed in comparison with what happened in Cleveland and what Cleveland looked like, just the optics of it and what Philly looks like is, I mean, one is the diversity,
sure,
and the number of young people that were there. I think that, I mean, Bernie Sanders obviously helped so much with continuing that millennial involvement in politics. And I think that was a huge contrast to the two conventions, and you know, just the diversity, the number of people of color and women, and not just like as speakers on stage, but actually in the crowd. You didn't have to play "Where's Waldo" with a person of color,
right?
Yeah, definitely not.
Right.
Because there were just so many, and it looked like America. It looked like our generation. You know, it looked like the representation of what I hope our party continues to strive to. And so that was a big part of it. Just the production value and the organization aspect.
Yes.
And like, and Trump tweeted about this, right? Where he was like, I didn't produce this. You know,
I just showed up on Thursday.
It.
Like, it's not my thing. And all these people are coming out and being like, no, he called me personally. And I said no. And like, all these people are
and
like,
he wanted to land in
bullshit.
A helicopter.
Yeah, like, everybody's calling his bullshit. But.
But I mean, you compare the two conventions, just what they looked like and how organized the Democratic convention was, how everything. I mean, the nights didn't have a big theme like
America work again.
Right.
Make America safe.
Well, they didn't
again.
Even stick with that.
So. No, and
yeah,
then, like,
and
well,
the speeches didn't even match that.
And the organization, like when Melania Trump was done and people started leaving, and there were like three more speakers, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, amateur.
Like,
hour
if you've never
sure.
done a convention before, you end with the big gun. Like, I don't, it was a mess.
Well, you look at all the people that stayed away from that convention.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, they could only line up his kids.
Yeah, his entire family.
Like the people that had,
Scott
like Paul
Baio.
Ryan had to show up. And Scott Baio and the Duck Dynasty guy. And
Mike Pence.
And yeah.
And he's like, it's going to be a star-studded affair. It's going to be amazing. And then it was a complete dud. And he was like, not my fault. I didn't do it. I just showed up. And you're like, bullshit. You can't even take a failing at like, oh my God. Anyway. But I totally agree. The Democratic convention was super polished. And we had so many big name, like not only Hollywood celebrities, but like big political people.
Well, and
like,
people you didn't know before becoming stars. Like we're watching him on MSNBC right now, the father of the fallen soldier. I think, I don't
Khizr
remember
Khan,
if he's Pakistani or.
Yeah.
But he was amazing, obviously.
Yeah.
The Reverend, I was just telling Rachel about.
Yeah, because, I didn't.
Reverend Barber?
Yeah, she missed
him. Oh.
He was amazing.
Man, and I think he totally, I don't know if he had prepared remarks or not. The press never got a transcript or prepared remarks. We got prepared remarks from every single person who spoke except for Reverend Barber and Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And Joe Biden is notorious for saying whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, he's off the cuff. Clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, I mean, he had the transcript, the teleprompter was going, and I was watching it and reading it along with him. And it was funny because I was like, oh, he's going off again.
Oh, you could tell. I mean, that was obvious, whether you were there or not. It's like he clearly was going
that's
off.
That's so interesting, though. I thought so, too. I mean, at several moments, but.
But that's what Joe Biden, that's what he does.
Well, yeah, that's what we love
totally
about him.
Who he is. Like, if he's struck with the spirit of the moment, by golly, he is going to throw out there what he's feeling. And I love that about him. I just,
too.
That is so great.
I love the end where he's just like, come on. Like, I was like, yeah, come on, Joe. Fuck. I love you. Like, I was totally inspired. I was like, yeah.
That would have been really funny, though, if on the teleprompter just said, come on, with three
come
exclamation
on,
points.
This is America. And you're like, fuck yeah, it is. Like, I loved
America,
everything about it.
Fuck yeah.
Exactly. It was amazing.
The crazy thing, I was reading like a bunch of people on the right And actually, my colleague Travis pulled together a bunch of tweets from famous Republicans who were like, holy shit, the Democrats have
stolen
taken
our message.
Yeah,
they've stolen our message. They've stolen this copyright we had on plagiarism.
Right.
Not plagiarism, on patriotism.
Right. Like, no, America is good, and don't let those dirty liberals tell you it's not. Oh, wait, sorry. Don't let those dirty conservatives tell you it's not. We love America, and it's great
amazing,
already,
yeah.
And we have the greatest military. When that fucking general was talking, and
yes,
the crowd was like cheering, and like I was like, I'm in the car listening to
this.
Yeah,
me too.
Been working long hours.
We were in the car,
and it was like, I was like getting goosebumps, and I was like, oh my God, this is the Democratic Party. Like, I'm kind of like, what the hell is happening? But I was like super like kind of moved by it.
Well,
I was like, that's kind of fucking rad. We have always loved our country.
That general was pretty funny. I mean, not funny, but it sounded like he was right out of a comic book, you know?
Yes.
I imagine him being like 50 feet tall and painted red, white, and blue. Like, especially when you're like, just hearing him on the radio.
Yeah, like, yeah. We couldn't see him, so.
Like a Superman spandex outfit, except it's the American flag.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved when he started like threatening ISIS, like, we will get you, you dirty bastards. We're going to kick your ass and bury you in the American flag.
Yeah, but he was also like, we are also going to like protect people, and we would never torture, and like, I know
no,
our
he
soldiers.
No, he had all the
he
right
was,
things to
it
say.
It was beautiful.
But,
it really was like, but, I know the Bernie people and the no more war and whatever. But
right,
like,
right. You knew you expected
it was,
that.
It was, I liked the speech. I thought it was like, yeah, okay, great. And
but
also,
it's not
I could just
what you're
feel.
Used to seeing in a DNC.
It's sort of like when I went and watched Mad Max Fury Road. And I was so delighted to watch it just because it pissed the MREs off so much. His speech for me was like, just, I just had this like tingle of joy all over my body because I could just feel the right wing seizing in terror and being so pissed that I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is all the things. Yeah.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It
so,
was.
Go ahead.
Who else really struck me? Bloomberg. I think Bloomberg. Leon, I gotta say too, Leon Panetta, even though he got booed and
a little bit,
heckled a lot, he was saying some really important shit about especially about the Russian hack thing, and they started heckling him right at that moment, and I was like, no, shut up, this is actually really important, like this is a really good piece. I think he, even though you know, I'm not the biggest Leon Panetta fan, and I think Michael Bloomberg is way more conservative than I would want. I think those speakers appeal to the television audience in a way that is going to be so important for the general election.
You're probably right. And based on everybody's reaction, you're right. But I'm not a Bloomberg fan.
No.
Never really have been.
I want to ask you, going back to the diversity piece that you were saying about the representation of people of color and women and all that kind of stuff. Did you see the Washington Post article that said basically the DNC was great on diversity but seemed to alienate white men?
There were multiple.
It's no joke. I had
story.
It sent to me by this very militant lesbian feminist who's amazing, and she sent it to me and said, "I swear to God, this is not satire. Tell me if I'm losing my mind. I keep reading this thinking it's going to be an Onion article, and it's not." And I'm reading it, and I'm like, holy, what? Like, it's literally, like, interviewing these white dudes that are like, you know, they just stopped talking about my issues. And, like, and then they go through, like, gays in the military and, like, women are talking. And, like, they just, it keeps getting worse. And I'm like, what the fuck, Washington Post?
It's not just the Post.
And they're like, isn't it a shame?
MSNBC
the kind
all
of
over
point of the article is like, it's kind of a shame they've alienated white men. And I'm like, fuck white men. That's literally what you said to me when I was telling you about it. You were like, fuck white men.
Yeah,
I'm a white
man.
Dude. Fuck white men.
Yeah,
like my God.
Like, we've been catered to for this entire country's history.
Well, pretty much history is history.
Yeah.
But,
so what the fuck are, why is this even a thing? And MSNBC's big on this too. They're always like, well, you know, she's just not reaching the blue collar.
I don't give a fuck.
And it's like their votes were three now. I mean, why is this?
I swear to God, it was crazy. So I just wanted to hear your take on that. If you had read it or.
I haven't read it, but I have seen people talking about it and a couple of other articles that were that were similar, and folks on Twitter too were saying that, and I was just like, really, people? I mean, I think that was the Tim Kaine choice, right? Like, yeah. You saw Samantha Bee posting bumper stickers, like faux bumper stickers after they picked Tim Kaine.
I didn't know.
And well, one of them said, "Hey, white voters or white men, are we cool now?" And Tim Kaine is about the whitest Whitey McWhiterson you could get.
But they speak Spanish.
For the Democratic Party. Because he just speaks Spanish and he doesn't mind brown people.
Right.
Well, no. We discussed that. Tim Kaine was the pick for your Aunt Marge
and
Des Moines.
And Aunt mm-hmm. Nancy, who are talking about how they don't really like Hillary that much, but... You know, that Tim Kaine sure seems like a nice guy. He seems very nice. You know,
he's just so nice.
He seems so very nice. And that was a good point he just made there. You know, I don't know about that.
If he was my neighbor, I'd bring him a casserole.
He seems very nice. He's a Catholic. Yeah. He's a Catholic.
He did missionary work with those brown kids. He went to help those brown kids.
It's very nice of him.
So nice.
Yeah, that's the pick. Yeah, and also white dudes. Yeah.
Well, And because Aunt Marge always shows up to vote.
Yes.
Even though she might be unaffiliated or she is not a party loyalist, she'll vote for whoever she likes.
Yeah. And not likes
our
politically.
Peers
she likes
do not
them.
Consistently show up to vote.
Right.
So again, we covered this last podcast. I'm not going to rehash it. But in listening to Tim Kaine, you're just like, I get it. Yeah. Okay.
Got it. He's not a terrible guy.
No, he's fine.
Just, like, Travis and I were watching it.
He doesn't
we
have the
like,
best.
He doesn't have
the best position and record on reproductive rights, although he has adopted the full on. He's not going to, as a vice president, he's not going to like secretly subjugate that or anything.
No.
So
he has no power. It's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. He's liberalish.
He's very nice. He's not going to be a bulldog. We were talking about that too. Like, she's got enough surrogates
tried,
that will be.
He did an awful Trump impression.
That's as mean as he's going to get.
He did. And I got to say, he was funnier than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But like in sort of like a dad joke way. Like dad jokes.
Yeah, totally. Exactly dad joke. And boyfriend picked me up from the train station today and I made like a really stupid dad joke. And he was like, that was a Tim Kaine joke right there.
Totally. But that's what wins over the soccer moms and the mm-hmm. you know margin
the white dudes.
And, mm-hmm. So this is what I'm saying. It's like everything seems to be falling into place in terms of Trump's speech with this was this crazy megalomaniacal
hateful.
Rant mm-hmm. and that tested really badly according to Gallup, and Democrats did everything right, and Trump is going off the rails again today. And so the next few weeks, the polls should reflect that. But I'm like not convinced they will. This is such a weird year where nothing really seems to matter.
Today, he's in Colorado Springs. So it's about an
hour.
He's
in Denver right
he's
now.
He's in Denver right
he's
now.
He's 5 miles away right now.
Today, he was in Colorado Springs and he like lost his mind and started insulting the fire marshal. And like,
yes!
I was like, what the fuck is
happening? I was like, do you
they
really
don't know what they're doing?
Do you really want the people in your rally to die?
No, and they love the firefighters here in Colorado.
Yeah,
That's a big deal. We have big fires here. We have
like
crazy
massive wildfires
every couple of years.
They just had one literally in Colorado Springs, like in the mountains that are right bordering Colorado Springs 2 years ago that burned like, I don't know, 1,000 houses. And all these firefighters, like a couple of them died. Like it was a whole thing. So for Trump to come in and insult the fire marshal is like, oh, God, you have no idea what you're doing.
Again, all these things combined – a week from now when the polls come out,
doesn't matter.
Is there going to be movement or is it going to be the same thing like Hillary 45, Trump 42? And
yeah,
we're
but in Colorado Springs, I think a few less people are going to vote for Donald Trump.
Well,
do
that's
not
what,
insult
what I'm asking
firefighters
Sarah, in this year where nothing seems to matter and nothing makes sense and reality's turned on his head, like is this finally going to start to break the way it should?
I think that it will, and I don't know if there's just like some Obama still going through me, you know, where I have this optimism, but I think that there are a lot of people who will talk about how much they hate Hillary and how much they can't stand her, and I think in the privacy of their voting booth, they're going to hold their nose and vote for Hillary because they're afraid of Donald Trump. And
you would think.
I think about the firefighters. My father's a firefighter in Oklahoma City.
Wow. Okay.
And the firefighters union in Oklahoma Like, we've talked a lot about how I wish that there's like a big movement in Oklahoma right now for school teachers, former teachers, spouses of teachers to run for state office because the state of education is so bad right now.
I heard that.
That they want like experts in education to be in the legislature.
And a bunch of them did, right?
Yeah, like tons and tons of them.
Like a bunch of candidates are teachers.
My fifth grade teacher's husband is running in my hometown.
Oh my God.
Which is like the coolest thing ever. And I still keep in contact with them. Like, she was one of my favorite teachers, and I got to be really good friends with her daughter. I mean, just the greatest, sweetest people.
Why don't you plug them real quick, and we can encourage our listeners to donate.
His name is Mike Bounds, Bounds. Gosh, I can't remember the House district. It's, I'm going to look it up on Facebook while we're talking. But it's in Yukon, Oklahoma, and which is just outside of Oklahoma City. We're just west of Oklahoma City.
Okay.
And I just can't say enough good about them. State Representative for House District 43.
Nice. Okay.
Awesome. And,
Everybody go donate to his campaign right now. Whatever the max amount is, it's probably small. They usually are in House District races.
No, it isn't in Oklahoma. It's really? They totally got rid of like all kinds of crazy limits and stuff. You can give like $1 billion.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty nuts. But but yeah, he's so sweet, and they are just such a great family. I've always loved them. But I talked to the firefighter union a lot about, I wish that we could get firefighters to do the same thing, because there are so many retired firefighters. They retire usually pretty early because their job is so physical, and there are a lot of health problems associated with it. And it's just like, man, if you retire at 50, go run for something. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that there are so many firefighters in Oklahoma that are Republicans. And the governor, Mary Fallon, totally tried to kill their pensions. And like, dude, what are you people doing? Like, you need to run for office and fight for your pensions. And so I wonder how many of them are ready to step up now. And they look at people like Donald Trump, who are shitting all over firefighters, and Mary Fallon, who's stealing their pensions, and it's just like, guys.
Yeah, but they've been doing this for years, and it's crazy. Like, the party loyalty doesn't die even when those very people are slashing your pensions and ruining your schools. And
no,
you know,
it's like the entire notion that, like, you know, Republicans and Democrats in some cases, but, you know, poor Republicans and rich Democrats vote against their self-interest,
right,
just for different reasons, you know. Poor people who vote Republican are voting against their best interests because they've been fed a line of bullshit.
Firefighters aren't necessarily poor.
I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about party loyalty. Right. And just saying, like, because they've been fed a line of bullshit about how, you know, eventually they'll too be billionaires. And and just wait, and hard work and all the things. And then, and morals and whatever, religion. And then rich Democrats vote against their own best interests because of, I don't know.
Yeah, but they know.
They know. They're voting against their own interests. That's right. Yeah. Like, a Warren Buffett's not like, man, maybe he'll lower my taxes. You know, he's definitely like, yeah. So anyway, that's really interesting, though. I heard that story about the teachers the other day on NPR, and I thought that was kind of awesome because they're number 50 in the state, right? Oklahoma?
Yeah,
for funding and for like
and
all the
we're
things.
Close behind
49,
and we used to be 49, and I think Mississippi was 50, and Mississippi has always been that one state where Oklahoma could look at it and be like, at least we're not Mississippi. And then we dropped, and then it was like, oh shit, we really are the worst in the nation. Mm-hmm.
Well, and doesn't part of this also speak to the utter incompetence of Debbie Wasserman Schultz not being able to make or just such a disaster for the Democratic Party, not getting any support in any of these House seats in any of these states across the Midwest and the South. And, well, I mean, we can get to her and the whole email leaks thing if we want, and I'm really glad she's out. But, yeah, I mean, that's part of it, is that we can't get our act together on our side to say, hey, I'm a Democrat, but I'm for your pensions and for better schools,
right,
and maybe
and
vote
so
for me.
This year, I know that there's been a movement and a lot of fundraising going toward getting state and local House seats back and Senate seats back and sort of trying to retake local government. In Colorado, there is the House Majority Project, which is an organization that helps Democratic House candidates with infrastructure and funding and stuff. And then there's also a Senate version of that. And that's happening all over the country. We are not as well funded as the Republicans were in 2014, and certainly not as well funded as they are now. But yeah, that didn't, a lot of that didn't necessarily come from her. And so oddly, yeah. So I think, I don't know what the leadership will look like going forward in the DNC, hopefully.
I've heard that Donna Brazile is cleaning house. Like, there are some friends that I have who are already getting calls from her, saying that she wants to meet with them. And, so I'm hoping that, I mean, I love Donna Brazile, and I think she deserved a lot better after 2008 than what she got.
Yeah, agreed.
She is incredibly politically savvy, and she understands the South better than anybody I've ever known in politics.
Well, yeah, and we can get real inside baseball on this, but what's interesting is I've gone and read some of the WikiLeaks email stuff, and the Bernie people are really pissed. The Democratic establishment and Hillary people should be way more pissed, because what is really revealed more than anything is the utter incompetence of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and really the self-interest above pretty much anything.
Yep.
And it's sort of coming out that Obama wanted to can her, and he kind of didn't want to deal with Biden because Biden really likes her. At least that's part of what I heard. And also,
but you got to think about it. Biden probably likes everybody.
Right.
True.
He's like, don't be mean. She's very nice. She's like,
right.
Biden's like,
no, he didn't even broach it. Obama was just like, I don't want to deal with that. It'll be fine. Whatever.
But you see, like, Obama started OFA. So it's like a shadow organization because he wanted to control it more than he could control the DNC for his reelection. He just kept OFA going.
Right.
When the DNC should have operated the way that he had OFA running.
But then that kind of melted away, certainly for the midterms.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, is it's like, you know, you might be pushing out your agenda, but when it comes to the midterms, like, you got to step up your game. And I think there was he took his foot off the gas after Obamacare in 2010, for sure.
Yeah.
Agreed.
We talked about that last time, where I was like, the one thing you can say about the Clintons is that they work their asses off for elections and to get more Democrats elected.
Yep.
Everybody think
that's forgets how important it is. Everybody forgets how critical it is. And then we all bitch about, you know, the deadlock and the bullshit. And it's like, you know,
well, we have a chance here. I mean, the other party has nominated a madman.
Yep.
And every candidate can hang their Republican opponent on him, and they either have to disavow and piss off the fired up blue collar white guys, or they can go down with the ship with him. And we need somebody competent, and it's a weird time to be in this weird transition, but
it is. And, you know, I've been out canvassing lately for some local politicians here in Colorado and talking to voters, and what's interesting to me is the ones that will even talk to you, because it's so early in the cycle yet, they say things like, I'm just not going to vote. I just hate Hillary and I hate Trump. And I say to them, like, I totally get it. That's totally fine with me. If you want to go to that ballot box and not vote for either one, that's fine. But what I need you to do is I need you to vote down ballot. I need you to vote for all your local, state,
because this affects your
everything
schools
else.
And your
then we start to have that conversation. And they're like, I don't really know who my rep is, and I'm like, well, here's who it is, or I don't really know who my senator is, or like, who's city council person, or whatever. And we have those conversations, and then we talk about, like, the effect, the direct effect that they will have on their lives, and also how much more their vote counts in these local, you know, sort of elections. And so it's been really interesting. Like, I wish everyone would vote for Hillary, obviously, but, like, I definitely tell people I don't push her on anybody. I'm trying to represent some local representatives and senators and stuff. So we just say, like, don't care. Just please, for the love of God, vote for all the D's on the ticket below mm-hmm. Hillary. That's all you got to do.
And I feel like this was part, a little bit of what Obama was saying on Wednesday night, whenever he talked about, you know, his history comes from the grassroots. He was a community organizer. He started local.
Yeah.
And he talked about, he had specifically addressed Bernie Sanders people. And he was like, look, if you believe in this, if you believe in these issues and you want to take these Bernie Sanders values to the party and to other offices, like, you've got to make this about more than just a presidential candidate. It has to be about mayors and state representatives and state senators. You've yeah. got to vote down ticket for all of these values. If you don't, then, and just place the level of importance on the president of the United States, you're doing a disservice to the issues that you hold dear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the shit we say all day long, is like, if you really want to change this party and you're so mad, okay, so go get involved, go support local progressive candidates, go get them elected at the local level and the state level and the congressional level, and like build a movement from the ground up.
And to that end, what is Jill Stein doing for local level?
Fucking nothing, other than freaking out moms and creating a larger anti-vaxxer problem than we already had. Thank you very much, Dr. Jill Stein.
Oh God!
I swear to God, I can't even with her. I don't even know.
I have no evens left.
I have no evens left.
Well,
that's
a good segue before we get to the break. The first 2 days, I don't know how much like TV you watched.
I watched every single hour and minute and of it. Like, I was taking my laptop to the bathroom when I had to pee.
Okay, so then you saw that especially MSNBC, because I didn't switch over to Fox, I was a little bit to CNN and the networks, but they really, really hyped up at least the first 2 days. Anytime there was a Bernie or Buster. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to stick 8 cameras in their face because the story was, you know, disunity and chaos. And so in person on the ground there, what was your sense of that? Was it as big a deal as it seemed to be? And were you there for the fart in? Was that successful?
So I actually was not there on Thursday night because I did Wednesday night, and my boss really wanted to go Thursday night because she's an older female feminist. And it meant a lot to her to be there. And so I was like, go, I'll babysit the website. We'll be good. So most of the protests, most of the like massive Bernie Sanders protests happened outside the security perimeter. To get into the security perimeter, you had to be pre-approved and pre-screened by the Secret Service. And then you had to have, there were different levels of passes. So one was a perimeter pass, which got you inside the fence to, you know, whatever the hell was happening in the tents and stuff outside the arena. Then there was an arena pass that got you inside the halls of the arena, but not into the hall itself. And then there was the hall pass, and then there was the floor pass. And
you better have your hall pass. Those hall monitors don't fuck around.
They don't fuck around, let me tell you. And they had these kids who were volunteers. Like, we're talking college students and high school students who were policing, you know, who could get in to the hall itself. Like, once you're in the arena and you get to a section where the seats are and stuff, they had like these young people, and they took it really seriously and were very strong in the face of people being like, I am entitled to be in there, you know, like, you know who my dad is kind of people.
Whoa.
They were amazing. And I saw a couple of times, like, people were like, I'm sorry, sir, you don't have the correct credentials. I can tell you where you can go and you can talk to them about it, but I can't let you in. I was like, go, girl.
That's awesome.
But the Sanders people, most of the protesters did not have credentials and were not cleared by the Secret Service to be in the perimeter. So they stood right outside the fence. And that was something that was a huge deal to them. That was something they really complained a lot about.
I read a lot about that.
We deserve to be in there. And it's like, I get that you want to protest, and I completely salute the protest thing. It's a security issue.
We'll talk about that after the break, but
okay. Like, this is a serious security issue.
Yeah. Sure,
yeah, you can't mess around with that.
Yeah.
All of our people are in there.
But the point is, even after Bernie said kumbaya, cut the shit.
No, we're not going to talk about it till after the break. I have a whole thing.
Okay. Okay.
No, we're going to have like an in-depth thing. Okay, so you had credentials all the way onto the floor?
I did not have floor credentials. I had hall credentials, but then they had a media pass where you could, once you're in the hall, you could go into specific sections and get a rotating floor pass.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sure.
So they'd let you onto the floor for like one specific speech or another speech. You just had to reserve them in advance. I had actually pretty good seats in the hall. So, I'm tall, but I'm not so tall that I could take photos over people if they were throwing signs and stuff in the air.
Right.
So I tended to stay in the, using my hall pass, 'cause I could be up high enough to take photos from above and be able to capture stuff a lot better. And I have a big ass telephoto lens. So I was able to work out that way.
Wow.
But there were tons of protesters inside the event too. These were people who did have tickets, who were pre-screened, who were delegates. We had a bunch of delegates who were protesting. They were either anti-TPP people. There was a bunch of Code Pink folks. I took pictures of every single one that I could find. And like some asshole on Twitter today was calling me out and was just like, "You were isolated inside." And I was like, "Yeah, here are all the photos I took of protesters inside." About being isolated. Wow. And like there was one guy who unrolled a banner, a bright yellow banner that said democracy ? Mm-hmm. And it was like on the very top row of where the seats were, and he hung it over the side right behind the stage so you could see it from half of the arena. Okay. And the club level was right below him, and somebody in the club level somehow was able to cut off the question mark on the flag, on the whatever the banner was. And I mean, like, there's no way you could have scissors or a knife or anything like that to, I mean, you had to have like a really sharp spoon to be able to do something like that.
Wow.
You know, people get creative, you know?
Yeah. So I was really surprised by that. There were some
anti-war protesters as well. I remember hearing them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was, I think those are the Code Pink people. Mm. Cause I saw a bunch of anti-war banners and they all tended to have, hot pink on them. And so I was just like, it's gotta be Code Pink.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who were instigating a lot of the Leanne Panetta stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were chanting a little bit during Obama's speech too. There was a little bit of anti-TPP chants going on too during Obama's speech. And I am all for protesting, but I was just like, shut the fuck up. I want to watch this.
Yeah. And we're going to get to all of that, after the break. So let's go ahead.
Yeah. We're going to take a really quick break. Stick around with us, Sarah. I know you're exhausted. Thank you so much for hanging
out. Hey, I'm awake now.
Sweet.
I'm rocking it.
All right. Let's do that. Okay, cool. So, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Meadows, fields of gray clouds, echoing silence, lightning, no thunder, all sound cease, only the earth breathes. She comes and she goes, she's high and she's low, she bends and she moans.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. Sarah Burris of RawStory.com is joining us. She spent 4 lovely days in Philadelphia avoiding heat stroke and
getting flooded
and covering all the DNC. Things.
I feel like there should be t-shirts where it's like, I went to the DNC and I survived. Like, it doesn't need to say I got this lousy t-shirt. It needs to be like, I survived 4 days of the DNC.
I'm a survivor of the DNC.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so the first thing we were sort of getting to at the end there, but I think that you and I may disagree on, is the Bernie... hold on.
Yeah, just be careful. You gotta be really careful not to touch. It's very sensitive.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm so sorry. The Bernie protesters inside the convention. So... I get it that they're very angry that Bernie did not win and that they feel that that the election was rigged in some ways. They don't like the system. They don't like the way that it was done. I understand, but I had a real hard time with the booing of some of our more progressive leaders and some of the people who I think are going to continue and have before these people ever knew who the fuck Bernie Sanders was, mm-hmm. that these people have been pushing for progressive causes and have been holding this sort of mantle of progressive causes for years. And then they come to speak at the DNC and they're being booed when they say Hillary Clinton by these people who I was embarrassed to have been a part of the Bernie movement, and I was offended and I was pissed. When you're booing Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker and like, fuck you.
Chanting
up.
Goldman Sachs and you sold out. And
so what are your thoughts about that?
I know that was a big thing for me too, where I was like, when you boo Elijah Cummings and John Lewis, and it's just like, you do not, when they booed Bernie Sanders, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And part of it was they decided that they were going to boo every mention of Hillary Clinton. Like every time somebody said the name Hillary or Hillary Clinton, they were going to boo. And what it didn't make sense. That didn't translate to everybody else in the world who were watching this. All they heard were, you're booing Elizabeth Warren. You're booing John Lewis. These legendary people in civil rights activism, in economic rights activism, and you are booing them when they hold your values.
That's right.
I mean, Elizabeth Warren was Bernie Sanders before it was cool.
That's right. That's exactly right. And John Lewis, you know, when they attacked him after he endorsed Hillary on Twitter and social media and stuff, I was like, okay, it's just a couple of obnoxious idiots that don't know who John Lewis is. This is not a man that you boo. This is not a man that you do anything other than shut the fuck up and listen to. And when that happened, it was like, okay, I'm completely done with the Bernie bros. I'm completely done with everyone who supports Bernie at this point. Like, fuck you. How dare you? How dare you take this moment and make it about your hurt feels? That's not what this is about. I was so mad.
And I mean, we talked about this last time, too. The privilege associated with that, the privilege that you have to protest someone like John Lewis or like Elizabeth Warren, that means that you are coming from a place where you have all of the things that you could possibly need and have no concerns about you know, all of the issues that they fight for.
That's right.
I mean, come on. Like, we have real issues with, I mean, obviously the North Carolina voter ID law just got overturned today. Which,
And Wisconsin.
Yes. It's huge.
But John Lewis has been fighting things like voter ID laws, which are inherently racist, and restoring the
basic
voter
civil rights
back
in the 60s,
for
like
50 years.
He's been fighting the civil rights movement for 50 years, and you don't get to be a 19-year-old white kid at a convention and boo him. You don't get to do that. You do not.
Yeah, inappropriate. Inappropriate. Also, can I just say, as somebody from the South, it's just not polite.
Right.
I mean, I know that the Republican Party is on this war against political correctness, but really, shit like political correctness and shit like booing. This is just really about being polite and being well-mannered. And I mean, if your mom is not yelling at you being like, you were not raised that way,
right?
Then that just ain't right.
Well, my mom would yell that at me, but in a New York accent. So,
and my mom would yell that at me and say, Rachel Ann, that is not right? polite. Do not do that. And I'm from Colorado. How dare you?
So we're covering all ends of the spectrum.
And, you know, sort of the political correctness part of it, you know, I hate this entire idea of political correctness as a bad thing. I think that...
Well, when most people say it, it's a cover for, geez,
why can't I say racist shit anymore?
I'm not allowed to yell the N-word.
Why can't I be as racist as I want to?
I mean, Sarah Silverman, I thought, did a really excellent job... At the convention, I loved when she was just like, hang on. Bernie Bros, you're being ridiculous. Or Bernie or Buster.
See, but that was much more effective than I thought it was. When I watched it, I thought, this is going off the rails and getting very awkward. But social media seemed to react
I loved it.
Oh, okay. You know,
she was such an ardent Bernie supporter and like the teeth. And for her to come out and be like, you are being ridiculous
right.
is like... Thank you. But she had a whole piece last year sometime about sort of in the world of stand-up comedians, how they would complain about being politically correct and how like they wouldn't play at colleges anymore and that kind of stuff. And she said, you know, paraphrasing, of course, basically like whenever the younger generation tells you you're getting something wrong, that you're being insensitive, that's probably a good cue for you to listen. Because history sort of always prevails that they were right. And so she's like, I don't take political correctness as like some, you know, sort of anti-free speech bullshit. It's like you're being insensitive to something that you may not have known, and we're just letting you know, and you being offended by that is kind of like myopic and you're going to lose in the test of history. And so...
Well, that goes to the extreme for conservatives, obviously.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't. You know what? The Bernie or Busters have a right to do what they did, and I have a right to say you're being fucking assholes.
Right.
And we can just sort of leave it at there, and then we get into, well, you're trying to censor me, and I'm like, no, I'm telling you you're being a fucking asshole.
No one arrested you and put you in jail for talking.
Yeah.
Right.
No one's censoring you. You're just saying you're being a fucking asshole right now.
And I do think that there is I didn't mind the chance for the TPP, and I didn't mind the chance for the anti-war stuff that happened.
Sure. Yeah.
Even though I really wanted to have that Leon Panetta piece about Donald Trump and the Russian hack thing to be included, because he rewrote his speech to include that.
Yeah.
Because that happened that day. And I really wanted people to hear that. But I think that what they were saying was important. And I'm totally with them on it. So it's kind of this double-edged sword where it's like, yeah, I'm with you. Do your thing. And then shut the fuck up for a minute so we can hear this.
I mean, in their defense, Leon Panetta is a target that makes sense to do that to.
Right.
And B, they couldn't have known that was coming in the speech.
Right.
And C, the way they see it, they don't really care the whole Russian angle. They care that some DNC staffers didn't like Bernie.
Right.
So, and that's what I understand. If you're a 19-year-old rich kid from California, and granted, they're not all rich kids probably, but, you know, I understand them not getting it. It's really frustrating that the media is still sort of taking the angle that, well, this is a juicy scandal, and look, some of these DNC people said mean things about Bernie. It's like the Russians fucking hacked the Democratic Party and are trying to influence an election, and the Republican candidate is literally egging it on.
Yeah.
Right. And then he's like, oh, just kidding.
Oh, that was a joke. Don't you know how to take a joke?
Right. Which is like so – I mean, it's like, is he gaslighting us? Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what he's been doing this entire campaign, is it's just gaslighting us. No, that's not what happened. That's not what I said. I don't care if you have a video of me saying it. That's not what I meant. That's not what
I
said.
You're going to trust your lying
ears? I don't
care.
Yeah, you don't. No, you're taking it out of context. No, you're wrong. You're the real loser and asshole. Like, it's crazy. I don't know. I'm with, I don't like war. I'm a pacifist, you know?
Yeah.
But I also, again, like, I don't know, Leon Panetta's a kind of respectable guy that I kind of wanted to listen to what he had to say about this election, and he's been in a lot of...
he's been in the shit.
Yeah, yeah. And so has, I think he has the right to speak without being booed. And I also think they have the right to boo, but I get to call them an asshole.
Yeah.
So what were your kind of impressions of interesting things or what you sense sort of in the halls and just around and outside and anything? Because Chris Eliza, who is sometimes posts some good stuff and then posts some terribly, horribly hackish bullshit, like he said, he posted a tweet the other day about an overheard conversation and said, this is why Trump might win. And it was overhearing a conversation about somebody trying to get an ambassadorship or something really inane and very,
oh my God,
very typical, you know, at a convention. Anything interesting you overheard or were part of or privy to, or,
I didn't hear like big power conversations, just because I wasn't really paying attention to them. Every politician that I overheard or like I listened in on interviews or something, I spent a lot of time on Radio Row just kind of hanging out because a friend of mine was doing some stuff for Stephanie Miller's show. And so I would kind of hang around with him for a bit.
Yeah.
And so I would listen to politicians talk, and it was just all very perfectly spun politician speak.
Scripted, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there were some – everybody was talking about the protest stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What day was that? I think it was Tuesday where they staged the sit-in in the press tent.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that and reading about it.
And I was not there. I had already left for the day. And my colleague Tom was there, and he was going to work from the tent that night. And he was, and they locked him in there. Like, they blocked people from getting out.
Yeah, I read that too.
God.
Then they finally realized, oh, this is a fire hazard, so we probably shouldn't do this. But they just had a whole bunch of people walk in and stage a sit-in. One of the things we talked about is that the Young Turks, like literally the protesters walked into the press tent, mm-hmm. and the Young Turks sent out a press release about it, like immediately.
Yeah.
And so we kind of wondered, did they know that this is going to happen?
Mm-hmm. I'm so over them.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I really love Anna, and I love the, some of the people at Young Turks are just very good, people. We disagree on a lot of different shit. But I wonder if they were involved in a little bit of this, or at least they had a heads up. So that was interesting. I really hate to say this. I'm totally going to say it though. We ran into so many people, and I don't know if they were like Beltway staffers or if they were like children of donors, but they were these white bros that were just so arrogant and so stupid. Like we went to one of the after parties, and it was like, it's, you know, it's the uniform. It's the Navy jacket with the, with the khaki pants,
mm-hmm.
and the loafers with no socks.
Oh no. Are you serious?
And
oh my God.
And I was really worried I was getting dehydrated. So I wasn't drinking. I was just like chugging water. At some point I had a Sprite, like that was my big thing for the night. Like, oh, I'm going to have a soda. I think he came over to the Holiday Inn. At one point we left the after party and didn't want to wait in the line for the Ubers. So we walked to the bar at the Holiday Inn so that we could sit and get a drink and cool off and upload some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're outside the Holiday Inn waiting for our Uber. And he is just like drunk as can be, wandering around. And he's like, oh, we need to go to the Ritz. We need to go to the after party at the Ritz.
Oh my God.
And he was like, bring me my Uber. And I was just like,
God.
Who are you? And we nicknamed him Douchey McBoat Shoes. And I was just like heckling him so bad. And I was just like, I bet you're friends with Luke Russert.
Oh my God. Yeah. I would have loved to have you like videotape that.
I really should have. I didn't. And how sad is it? I was so tired. This was like 2:30 in the morning. Oh my God. And I just didn't. It didn't occur to me. But he was just so terrible. And of course, he got the black car.
Of course he did.
And just loaded it full of a car full of women.
Jesus fuck.
I walked by a kid who was doing the loud talking thing. You know, when people speak louder whenever they're talking about something that makes them seem important.
Yes.
Because they're secretly insecure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when he said the words, "Well, the Senate PAC sent me," and I was like, if you have to say Senate PAC that loudly, you're probably talking about a state Senate PAC. Just saying.
Wow. That's kind of amazing. Just so douchiness after hours.
Yeah, there was just a lot. There was some douchiness. And I think you run into these people in D.C. a lot. When I first moved here and I started going to, I went to every happy hour, every party, everything I could, because I was trying to meet people and get in with who, like, find a good crowd to fall into. And I ran in, I call them the card bros, where they're like, "Hey, can I give you my card?" They were all over. They're all over Capitol Hill. And it's just young people who have an internship, or they're a first year staffer, or, you know, first level junior staffer. And they want to find people that they can use to climb the ladder.
Sure.
After daddy got them the job.
Right.
So you run into those folks a lot. It's why I don't go south of DuPont anymore. I'm just like, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And I forgot that those people exist because I just stay out of it. I stay away from them.
So that's ironic that, you know, they're a couple blocks away from maybe where you live, but then you had to run into them in Philly.
I know, right? It's because I try really hard not to go south of DuPont. I mean, maybe over to Chinatown, but that's so touristy.
Yeah.
But they're like, DuPont really is filled with more artistic and hippies and it's more of a gayborhood. And I stay off of like U Street and stuff like that. And you get more hippies in the northern part of the city because they want to be around the park and go hiking and stuff like that. So it's just more, you don't run into a lot of self-important, you know, people with rich daddies.
Right. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk to you about is Hillary Clinton's speech, because we didn't get to it before. And I just watched it, actually, today. I worked late last night and just kind of was politicsed out. So I just watched it maybe like 2 hours ago, and I got very weepy at the beginning. I loved the video and the intro and just sort of watching a woman on that stage and feeling kind of the history and the impact of that, whether you like that woman or not, for me was, I got a little weepy. And I, you know, she's not a great orator. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the things that she said. Her delivery has always kind of been difficult. But I thought it was a pretty great moment in my life and in American history. And I thought the speech was pretty great. What are your thoughts?
So I have to admit, like, going into it and in this whole election, I've really ignored this whole woman president thing. And I've been one of those millennials where, you know, I felt like, of course, we're going to have a woman president at some point. This is not a huge deal to me. Mm. And yet whenever she said the words, "And that is why I accept your nomination for president of the United States," it took my breath away. And I got really weepy as well. Like, it really struck me in that moment. And I felt the weight of that and was like, oh my God, this is real. This is happening.
Yeah. Me too.
And I didn't expect it.
Yeah. I didn't either. Travis just put it on. We were making dinner and he put it on and I was like, okay, let's watch it. Let's watch it. And like, immediately I was like, ah, shit. This is going to be a whole thing now.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll say too, I think most mothers and daughters have complicated relationships, and I definitely have had like a weird history with my mom, but I'm very protective of her. And I've always gotten the sense that Chelsea is also very protective of her parents, but particularly of her mom, which probably goes back to the shit that went down in the 90s.
Of course.
Absolutely.
And so having Chelsea announce her, despite the like uncomfortable laughter that Chelsea was doing like every couple of minutes in her speech, the moment when they were on stage and reading their lips and what they were saying when they were exchanging words on stage, like you could see Hillary Clinton say to her, "I'm so proud of you."
Yeah.
And I grabbed a Reuters photo because they went up on the wire pretty fast, and I sent it to my mom and I said, "This makes me think of you right now." Aww. And my mom was like, "What the hell? Well, I'm not even watching this. What's going on?" Because my mom, the anti-Clinton Republican, she's like, "What do you mean?" And I was like, just the way that they interact and the way that they looked at each other. And that was so normal. That was so
real.
That was a mother and a daughter right
there.
That's
right. And it was beautiful. That moment was beautiful. I couldn't agree more. I don't know. I love her, and I didn't think I'd get that emotional, but I definitely did. And
I agree. I totally did not expect it, and it just crept up on me, and it happened, and I was like, oh my God, this is happening right now.
Yeah, it is big. It is. I mean, I think we've been talking about it for so long and so much and so ad nauseum, and you read 8 million articles and think pieces and bullshit, but when it happens and you watch it, it's like, holy shit, there's going to be a lady president. Like, there's going to be a woman as a president. That's a big deal. Like,
and she talked today, I think it was today, on their trips, they're doing that bus tour thing, and she talked about how, you know, from now on, you'll be able to say to your sons and your daughters and mean it, that you two can be president. And I do think that that is important. I think that that holds so much weight. Both her and Barack Obama have done so much for the hope for the future of our country with all of these young kids who now can look up. And they talked about it, looking up on the wall of all of those white dude presidents and seeing, you know,
seeing
a person of color.
Yeah.
And seeing a woman and knowing that it is not an exclusive club anymore.
Right. And
I think that's important.
I just feel like seeing someone who looks like you or being represented goes such a long way toward everything. Like I just like my
it
enduring
does.
Image of Obama with the little kid touching his hair is my favorite photo that ever has existed in the world. And it's like, it makes me cry every time I look at it because it's like, that's the whole game. That's it. That's the whole
There's an incredible photo, that a White House photographer took of Michelle Obama at the Brown v. Board Museum in Kansas, in like Topeka, Kansas. And they set it up to the way that it looked, you know, during the 50s and 60s, where you have a sign that says whites and a sign that says coloreds. Hmm. And Michelle is talking to, I think, the woman who runs the museum. And the woman is standing underneath the sign that says whites. And Michelle is standing underneath the sign that says coloreds. And it is a very profound image. And that's one of those photos where you're just like, oh, my God.
Wow.
Like, these are these moments where, you know, I totally stalk the White House photographers on social media because they take good images. They take amazing images. The deputy photographer takes a little bit more artistic images. He's the one who took that the one at the Brown v. Board. And some of these are just really powerful and they take you back. But that is America now. And
that's right.
There's no going back from that.
No.
And
you know, sort of to this whole other news story, but to this point, in Michelle Obama's speech, she said, you know, I live in a house that was built by slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watch my daughters play on that lawn with their dog. And when I heard it, it made me cry. And then I, next day, opened up fucking Twitter. And here's Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Like, they were very well fed. And, you know, like this whole crazy white people argument that like slaves weren't really that unhappy and it was probably fine.
Oh my God.
And I was having this conversation with my friend today at lunch, or I guess the day that it happened, we were having this conversation. And she just said, like, how do you even get away with saying that? Not even that, but how do you even think it? And
yeah,
I said,
that's my point. Mm-hmm.
So my point, here's my opinion on that. I don't know if this is right or not, but the sort of fetishization of the founding fathers that the Republican right and conservatives have, this like, they like fetishize them.
Yeah,
to this
point. They're gods.
They're
gods.
They're not people. They could never possibly have made a mistake. So we're writing this narrative in our head of how we can excuse it. Like, yeah, there were bad slave owners in the South, but the White House, no, they must have treated them very well. There must have been something good. They fed them well. And like, we have to make excuses because we cannot believe that the founding fathers could have possibly been
done anything
faulted
wrong,
right,
in any way,
right, ever, or like,
even though we know that Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton had a fucking duel,
right, and it killed him, and that Thomas Jefferson raped slaves and had babies, and like,
right,
these were flawed men.
Yeah,
that doesn't make the document not good.
No, it doesn't.
Less valuable.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And also, I think there's a sense of whiteness that is like, there's so much trauma that white people have caused throughout history and throughout the world that we have to, like, it's to this country and throughout the world with colonialization and, like, the whole thing. White people are the scourge of the earth, essentially. Like, we've just done nothing but fuck other people
over.
Rape and pillage forever. And so it's too much to bear. And so we just try to just justify it. This guy on Twitter said, in defense sort of a Bill O'Reilly, and somebody said something back to him, and he said, to my knowledge, my ancestors never had slaves and never intended to, so I shouldn't have to have guilt. And you're like, wow, to miss the point.
That's not how this works.
To miss
That's
the
not
point.
How any of this works.
Ever. No, it's not. It's not. I mean, it's almost like, I don't know, we were coming so far, and then it just seems like with this year, with this election, we're just taking like four steps back.
Well, we are and we aren't, because the Trump campaign is running mostly on that white resentment and white
and the last dying breath of the
hegemony.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's not enough of them.
Right.
There really aren't. And yes, you had a this is what I believe, and I could be wrong. Like, you look at the polls a week ago, and you had this confluence of the Comey report and the Bernie Busters being really pissed off and the RNC happening. And it's like, wow, Trump could actually win this thing. It's like, okay, well, when we get down to brass tacks, no, there's not enough angry white dudes out there to fill that void. But there are enough in this country that really make you think, like, That's part of, like, the cynical part, where I hear these great lofty speeches by Obama, we're going to unite the country. It's like, no, there's a good chunk of the country that I do not share the same headspace with and never will. And I think of Bill O'Reilly, like, we can all agree what he said was horrendous, but I can't even put myself in the headspace of somebody who would think to say something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of person has the thought process and the feelings to say, well, you know, those slaves, don't feel too bad for them. They were well fed. Like, even if that were true, which it most likely is not.
They were also owned by another human being.
Yeah.
Beaten, family separated, raped, murdered at will, lynched. Doesn't, like, what the fuck? Oh, well, they had really, I bet they ate really good scraps. Like, what the fuck kind of thing is that to say? Again, they just can't.
And we haven't even gotten to Roger Ailes and just every day more horror. It's unfolding almost like the Bill Cosby thing.
I'm
just waiting to have drugged and raped somebody. But we'll get to that actually in the game that's coming up in a minute. Well, we're introducing a new game. Sarah, you're going to be part of it in the spirit of wait, don't tell
but
me.
Before we get to that, did you have anything else to add? Because I feel like we just talked for a while.
Well, I mean, just to go back to the Clinton speech, I do agree with you. She has issues with delivery. She is not she is no Obama.
No.
You
know, when it comes to speeches.
She never will.
No one is.
Yeah, nobody really is. even Joe Biden, who's done some pretty epic speeches in his time. I'm thinking of the one that he did for, people, families of soldiers who had been killed I think that there are some great orators. She is just not one of them. As Clinton's speeches go, however, that was really good.
Agreed.
She
probably her best.
The one thing boyfriend and I were talking about on the way home was that we really wish that they had given her a little cough button.
She needs to back away when she clears her throat. She does the rage.
Yeah.
I notice it because I do it too. It's like postnasal drip. So like I kept being like, oh man, like I'm sorry, Hill. I know how it is when I listen back to myself and I'm like, quit clearing your throat. Agreed.
And I think whenever you get nervous, right, your mouth gets dry and there's just a lot going on there. And typically, like if you're doing a radio thing, they call it the cough button.
Right.
I don't have one of those.
It just mutes the microphone. And if they knew that she was getting sick or she wasn't feeling well or whatever, they should have given her that. Because in that crowd, like you wouldn't have heard it. You wouldn't be able to tell.
But on
TV,
tell. You did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was. Yeah.
So I felt bad for her for that. But
yeah.
But the speech itself, she did a good job. She looked really good. Like she looked confident. She looked strong. She still looked soft. Which I know has been a thing that they've been trying to do for her is they want to soften her a little bit because she's been the female politician. She's like, I have to prove that I can be a hard ass.
Right. But I can't be Margaret too hard, Thatcher. But they also have to be this and I can't be that. Also, did you notice she wore all white like the suffragettes?
She did. And I loved it. I loved that suit. I mean, I hate to talk about women and fashion and, because I could definitely talk about how Tim Kaine made a serious strategic tie mistake.
I agree.
Yeah, but I think that's part of his charm. I almost think that's intentional. Like, look, I'm your goofy neighbor next door who, you know,
who's wearing the weird stripy thing.
Who's going to fix your kid's bike? And I don't know how to dress because I'm not a highfalutin. You know.
Not that dude. But yeah. I just thought her
like
wearing all white.
He's wearing an awful Target Oxford shirt right now in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So,
like, yeah. I just thought her wearing all white was a total shout out to the suffragettes who always wore all white.
Yeah, and she looks good. She sounded good. I wish that. I don't know. There were a lot of things that where when she makes fun of Trump and she kind of makes a joke about it, she's really good at it.
Yeah.
Like if she the science comment that she made that was just tongue in cheek, that was really funny. I like it whenever she's a little funnier.
Yeah. But she had to get serious though too.
I think she's probably a naturally really funny person, but she knows that, well, she's been sort of, it's been drilled into her for years and years that you can't be funnier. They won't take you seriously.
Right.
Men
who
are funny are great. No, 'cause then they're like charming and funny and smart. Women who are funny. Well, first of all, men don't like women who are funny because it threatens them. Not all men. I'm just saying, you know, the narrative she's been taught. Mm-hmm. And then also they won't take you seriously.
Right.
But I bet you in real life, like not on the campaign trail, she's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, she's a brilliant person. So smart people generally do the best sarcasm. And there's actually a Harvard study about sarcasm and how it is indicative of higher IQs, which I think is fair.
I remember after 96.
Right?
Well, yeah, we're definitely assholes. But after 96... When Bob,
I don't know what you're talking about.
When Bob Dole lost, all of a sudden he didn't give a shit anymore, and he was funny and sarcastic as shit. And everyone was like, "Where's this coming from, Bob Dole?" He's like, "I don't give a shit anymore.
Got nothing to lose."
The same with Al Gore, right? After Al Gore lost, he became this like tongue-in-cheek funny dude, and it's like, "Where did you come from?
You brought a cardboard man to life. What happened?"
I blame Joe Lieberman for that.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I blame so many things for that.
Lieberman.
But let's not get into the 96 and 2000
Jesus.
Presidential
right.
campaign.
Tap dancy Christ.
Okay, Travis wants to play a game. What are we doing?
Okay, we're introducing a new segment. It's called Who Said It? I'm going to read you a quote from the news of the past days or weeks.
Oh,
and I'm going to give you three multiple choice answers. And
thank God there's a multiple choice.
There's multiple choice, and you guys are going to guess which is the correct scenario. You may already know the answer, so wait till all the answers are given.
Okay.
So, Rachel, you're going to read the quote.
I'm going to read the quote.
First one.
What the fuck is
You gotta read it.
The quote, what is this?
You'll
the
find
quote
out.
Is, you're going to find me whores.
Was that? Okay, so again, the quote is, you're going to find me whores. Is that A, what Bill Clinton said to a staffer via email before a campaign stop in Scranton, about to be released by Russian hackers via WikiLeaks? B, what Roger Ailes reportedly instructed a former Fox News talent booker who claims he sexually harassed her for 20 years? Or C, a line Donald Trump reportedly was set to use during his acceptance speech last week, only to be reluctantly scrub it in the last minute at the behest of Paul Manafort and Ivanka.
Oh, I actually...
These are all plausible,
I
right?
I know this. Well,
wait, hold on.
You're not going to find whores in Scranton. I mean...
you look hard enough.
I mean, there are sex workers everywhere. I mean, it's got to be Roger Ailes, right?
So
it's,
you say
yeah.
B?
Mm-hmm. I say Roger Ailes.
Ding, ding. You are both correct.
You were going to say you already know this, but what were you going to say?
Yes.
Yeah, we almost covered that. I think we were a little late to it because we were all so tired. But yeah, it was totally Roger Ailes.
You're going to find me whores.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well, and he's not referring to sex workers, I'm assuming. He's referring to like just women that he can harass. Or is he referring to sex workers?
Not sure.
Okay.
Not sure.
I think he was just referring to any, like, get me a girl.
Get me a girl, that's what I'm
talking about. That he refers to as whores.
Yeah, because, you know, he's a garbage human.
So this woman who worked basically booking talent at Fox News, Roger Ailes basically, at first, I don't know if they, I think they actually had a sexual relationship with him just wearing her down, from what I understand from reading the story, and then he basically used her as a pimp to find
Jesus
women.
Christ.
So that just broke today. So
just dumpster fire garbage person.
So keep in mind, 2 weeks ago, like O'Reilly and Geraldo and Hannity and all these people went on record saying these women are all liars and there's no way. And
I thought they were all going to quit. I thought they were walking out if Roger Ailes left.
Of course not.
There needs to be like a countdown. Like it's been 2 weeks since everybody said they were quitting and they still haven't.
Okay.
Yeah, they should. They should.
So moving on, we got another quote. Next quote, go ahead, read it.
Oh my God. What the hell? Quote, you are a Hillary agent. I don't know what that is, but...
The quote is, you are a Hillary agent. Was that A, what Donald Trump said to the Colorado Springs fire marshal today after he stopped allowing people into his event as fire code capacity was about to be exceeded? B, what an angry Sean Hannity said to Wolf Blitzer, who appeared to be celebrating Hillary Clinton's nomination last night at a press party? Or C, what an angry Bernie or Buster said to the manager at a Philadelphia Wawa after he was kicked out for violating the no shirt, no shoes, no service policy?
Oh my God, I wish it was the Wawa. That would be great. But I was actually watching the Trump thing today, so it's Donald Trump.
Yes, it is.
Ding, ding. Both correct again.
Yes, it is.
You guys
Although,
are good at this game.
I could believe the Wolf. There was some Wolf Blitzer thing that I saw today.
Well,
and I was like,
there was a CNN rap party, basically, and they caught pictures of Wolf having a grand old time, and then somebody said, look at that bastard in the tank for Hillary celebrating her nomination. He's supposed to be impartial. And then even Jeffrey Lord had to say, no, dumbass, it was the CNN rap party after getting no sleep for 4 days. That's what we were celebrating.
I gotta say, the one thing you should do is get on YouTube and look up Wolf Blitzer Jeopardy.
Jeopardy, yeah, I know. The man's an idiot, and I can't stand him.
I can't stand him either.
But in this case, he's not guilty of being a shill for Hillary Clinton. And if you
it amazes me he can tie his shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're referring to.
He's awful.
We'll have to look.
You gotta watch
he's
it.
He's an anchor for CNN.
No, I know who he is. I just don't know what the Jeopardy
thing. He went on Jeopardy, and I think he finished like negative 8,000.
Okay, great. Yeah.
It was embarrassing. Yeah. Like, he answered questions that were so stupid. Shit that we know, and that, you know, you learn. And like
we had another technical snafu, but we have one more Who Said It quote. This one should be pretty easy.
Come on.
No, you gotta say it.
Come on.
So the quote is, come on. Was that A, what an incredulous President Obama said to a CNN anchor who asked if Hillary Clinton's nomination might finally open the door to a future of presidential candidates who weren't white men? B, the only words a frantic Scott Baio could utter as he nearly wasn't able to make it into the RNC last week for his big speech as security agents outside denied him entrance because they had no idea who he was?
Oh.
Or C,
what Joe Biden yelled in the ad-libbed closing remarks of his speech on Wednesday.
Which we already talked about.
Yay! You guys got them all right!
But 100%. Do I get like Bill Curtis to leave a message on my answering machine or something?
Oh, that'd be so sweet.
I know.
He's booked, unfortunately. Oh, but B, I don't know if Scott Baio said come on, but B is true. Scott Baio almost couldn't get in to the RNC because security had no fucking idea who he was.
And
it was organized so well that I guess they didn't have the paperwork.
And he looks like vaguely ethnic too. So they were maybe like,
The security didn't know that Chachi was coming in to make a speech because it was so well, such a tight shit being run.
Charles in Charge too or something?
Yes.
Yeah, I never liked that.
He was in Zapped.
For that.
And as Pierre and I discussed on the other podcast, he was in the after school special Stoned.
Was that on the,
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, no, podcast. I just mean the episode about Say No to Drugs. Yeah, yes. That was my favorite one. Anyway, that's totally off topic.
Yeah, Scott Baio almost didn't get in, but he was brilliant as a teenager who is awkward, so decides to start smoking marijuana and nearly kills his brother with an oar.
Okay, well, guess the all-star lineup he had there.
Fun time.
So B could technically be true because I could just see Scott Baio just hopelessly saying, come on. Come on. I'm Scott Baio.
Don't you know who I am?
All right. So that's about going to wrap it up.
Scott fucking Baio.
Sarah, thank you so much. I know you're exhausted.
You're such a trooper. Thank you so much.
For shooting the shit with us and giving us some insight. We're going to have our other friend who's at the DNC, Cortland, join us hopefully next week, and also a gentleman named Jermaine, who is affiliated with the local Black Lives Matter movement, hopefully joining us next week.
Yeah, so it's going to be a big week.
So lots happening, and God knows what Trump will say tomorrow, and God knows what kind of crap the Russians will leak via email tomorrow. So all kinds of fun stuff to be on the lookout for.
Yeah. As always, find us on Twitter at Irreverent Duo or hate mail to irreveranttestimony@gmail.com.
Find Sarah Burris on Twitter at Sarah Burris.
That's Sarah with an H.
Yes,
and two R's, I-S.
And look for her on Raw Story. Go to rawstory.com, look up Sarah Burris, and find all kinds of amazing articles and stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Sarah.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys out there. See you next time. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Adios.
Good night.